listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. I hope everybody's having a safe beginning of the week. And Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation is in studio with me today. Paul, welcome in.
Glad to be here.
Paul, I want to start by telling people I like to have you on the show because you're one of the few people that will really evaluate what's going on in state and local politics. And then without just complaining, you always have some suggested solution. And those aren't always the perfect solutions, and you say that admittedly, but you're gathering information from other states, you're seeing what best practices are other places, and you're trying to incorporate and you're, if you will, you're like a coach that's taking the players you have and trying to come up with a plan, and I love that. So my compliments to you.
Well, thank you, and that is a great description of what we actually try to do when it comes to state and local public policies.
Well, I am also never surprised now at how much I don't know about what's going on, because it's the political process. You know, everything you gave us updates very frequently from the New Mexico legislature, and I am totally confused by what is happening in the state budget. So let's give a little background information that you were kind enough to provide for us. Right now, oil prices have gone from about just over $50 down to about $30, $31 a barrel. I understand that break-even's around $40. So the oil producers in the state of New Mexico right now are losing money.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the governor approved a budget, and I want you to talk about that and how now she's trying to make up for it, because I understand that up to half of the budget comes from oil and gas revenues. Is that correct?
About 40%. Mm. So a significant proportion of that budget does come from oil and gas revenue. So let's take a quick step back and describe kind of how we got here with regard to oil and gas prices in particular. So as most folks are probably aware, Saudi Arabia and the Russians are two of the globe's major oil exporters. Saudis have been in that position for years, going back to the 70s and the price shocks, et cetera. What has happened in the last, five or so years is that a new process came along called fracking, that involves injections of certain chemicals and whatnot underground, and combining that with computer technology that allows petroleum engineers to almost literally see underground, it's unlocked vast new resources in oil and natural gas. And America has now become the globe's leading producer of oil and gas. Well, unless your consumption as the globe is going way up, which it's not really, it's actually declining or holding flat for a variety of reasons we can't get into in this interview.
Well, one of those reasons is the fact that transportation industry is virtually shut down right now around the world.
I'm talking pre-coronavirus.
Pre-coronavirus, yeah. I gotcha.
Because this problem really has been looming out there, in my opinion, prior to the coronavirus happening. So I'm going to get to that in just a second. But we've had a global oil supply glut, so too much oil chasing too few vehicles and whatever other uses. And that has been okay for the U.S., Permian Basin, New Mexico, for a short time, relatively, a few years, because the Saudis and the Russians, who both are incredibly dependent in many ways, like New Mexico, on oil and gas, had been throttling back their production. So you have American producers ramping up. You have those guys, the Russians and Saudis, ratcheting down. And the economy globally had been slowing down. The U.S. Had been doing okay. But just during the legislative session, essentially, this year, prices went from the mid-60s a barrel down to the mid-40s. So that was a big drop before coronavirus came along. And then coronavirus comes along. The economy's slowing. People aren't going out. Transportation, all this stuff is not happening as much. And the Russians and Saudis decide we're going to have a price war for market share. So basically they're saying to themselves and us, all right, we're coming for you, frackers. We know that $40 a barrel is what you guys can produce at. We're going to produce it I don't know. Is it 30? Is it 25? What price point are they really going to try to lock in to essentially drive American producers out of business? So that is kind of where we are right now. Barrel price, $30. And New Mexico policymakers just done in Santa Fe. Budget ink barely signed and dry. We are dealing with a brave new world where we have no idea how this state's going to pay its bills, how many of these folks are going to stay in business. All that kind of stuff is totally up in the air right now.
Paul, let me ask you, though, this was just last Wednesday that the governor had a deadline to sign this budget, and the drop in oil prices had already happened.
Right.
I thought we interviewed our congressman, Steve Pierce, now chairman of the Republican Party, and he thought that there was a likelihood that a special session would be called and she wouldn't necessarily sign that bill. But it looks like what she did is she signed the bill, and there's a lot more for us to talk about this, but then now she's chopping it all up.
Well, so her deadline, like, the budget is the budget. She cut out $50 million in transportation projects and some small other spending, but essentially the budget was the budget. I mean, it's $7.6 billion budget. She could have removed a lot of major projects and vetoed those, but I think her mentality is, well, we're going to sign essentially the budget, hope that something changes, because oil is a volatile market.
Sure.
Something could happen. I don't think it will, but something could, and we're going to hope for the best. Now, this is what happened in 2016 here in New Mexico. Basically, listeners may recall that we were at over $100 a barrel. You know, people were filling up for $4 or more a gallon of gas at the pump. And within a span of a few weeks under then Governor Susana Martinez, prices dropped precipitously down to the mid $40 range. And I, you know, being more aligned with Governor Martinez and her way of thinking, we definitely tried to pass the word along to encourage them, because this was early in the year. This was shortly after the session. And, you know, our thinking was, let's rip the Band-Aid off now. Let's address the issue. Let's have that special session and deal with it, because it was an election year, just like we're dealing with all those, it was just a presidential election year, just like today. So four years ago, essentially. And she didn't. She waited and waited. And then October, in an election year, rolls around, and suddenly New Mexico's in a special session. And, yeah, they got the spending cuts done. It was very tough. But it just made that pain fresh in people's minds. And Martinez's party, who had control of the House at the time, got clobbered in that 2016 election. Now, will Michelle Lujan Grisham and her Democrats suffer the same fate? We don't know. We know that this is a purple to blue state, and November's still a long way off. But if I was advising Governor Lujan Grisham in the same exact way I would have told Susana Martinez at the time, address the issue at least by June or July. Don't let this slide towards the election, no matter what your hopes and prayers are in terms of the price of a barrel of oil or the budget situation.
So the federal government is coming up with a lot of different things to try to help the economy. Nationally.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fed has slashed interest rates. Now, I get a number of calls. I was a banker for 30 plus years, primarily a real estate lender. And a lot of people are calling me saying, oh, well, the Fed is almost down at zero. So should we automatically go buy a house or refinance our house? And the answer is this. People don't understand that the rates that the Federal Reserve set are not really the rates that affect 15-year 30-year mortgage loans. What's affecting that now is the bond market. So because the stock market, and we have another down day today, and we don't know what's going to happen the rest of the week, but last Friday, the market was up almost 10%. Mm-hmm. On Monday, it's down almost 9%. So it'll be interesting to see what happens the rest of the day.
And that could change dramatically just
it could.
Within the day.
Well, and that was what was bizarre about last week. Last Friday, we're up 10%, but the day before, the previous 4 days of the week, we lost 12 to 14%
right.
of the market in value. So, you know, and I'm primarily looking at the Dow as, mm-hmm. as an index. So it's really confusing for investors, but what has happened is there's what they call a flight to quality, where people take money out of the stock market and they go into the bond market. So the higher the prices of bonds go up, the yields drop, and that is actually what's making mortgage rates go down. But I was doing a little bit of research based on the bond market, and if I add the normal margins that lenders typically make, they ought to be able to be doing loans right now on mortgage loans at 2.8 or 3%. And they're not doing that, Paul. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're taking profits.
Right.
Their rates are still at that 3.5 range to 4%. So I don't know what's going to create a world where they don't take profits as much as they. And I'm not criticizing that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, this is a capitalistic world. But, you know, I believe in capitalism. I believe in the Republic of America. I believe in everything that stands for. But I also think that people sometimes take advantage in situations like this.
Well, I am less of an expert, quite honestly, on some of the interest rate issues than you are. Obviously, you've dealt with that directly in your profession. What I can say is that, broadly speaking, talking at the national level, you eventually get to a place of diminishing returns in terms of cutting interest rates. And I just don't know how much impact reducing interest rates to zero or beyond zero is going to make in terms of a difference in our economy. Now, I don't pretend to understand how this all works via the home loan situation and some of the lending that goes on. But the fact is, simply put, there are fewer places to spend your money right now. You know, the idea of going out to dinner in most states in this country is an act of courage for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Work at all levels has been disrupted. Travel has been, you know, almost eliminated. And I had a trip with my daughter during spring break to New York City. We were going to take the red eye on JetBlue up from Albuquerque to New York. That all got put on hold. And we're just one family of many that is dealing with these kinds of issues. So you're dealing with government policies at one level that are trying, like interest rates, to prop up the economy, but everything else is pushing against that. And obviously you can't underestimate the fear factor. So, you know, Jim, I lived in the DC area doing public policy work, during 9/11 and there's no, I mean, with the possible exception of the Spanish flu after World War I 100 years ago, which is beyond the realm of anybody's real memory or lifetime, we've never seen anything quite like this. 9/11 was one shocking event. There were aftershocks, if you will, when there was anthrax packages being mailed to Capitol Hill offices. There were some other scares, and there was a lot of red alerts and whatnot. A lot of issues cropped up after 9/11, but slowly but surely, the population of the country got more used to the new normal and was willing to kind of go back to life as they knew it before. When does that happen in New Mexico and the rest of the country? We don't know. There's no light at the end of the tunnel at this point. And we're going to have all of this business shut down, all these industries and all these decisions put on hold. Who is ultimately going to make the decision to, okay, folks, you know, we're able to go back to normal. I mean, you know, March Madness and mm-hmm. the sports leagues, those aren't huge, huge parts of the economy, but, I was told that March Madness alone is like a $1 billion deal because people travel and people have, parties and gamble and all those kinds of things. So it's the impact of this is still going to be felt a year, 2 years out, just in terms of all of these kinds of issues that we never seen in our life before.
We're going to take a quick break and say thank you to our sponsors, and we do even more appreciate them in this environment. Paul has framed kind of what's happening at a national level, but we're not going to go away from the New Mexico budget and what Michelle Lujan Grisham has to do as our governor. We'll come back and talk a little bit about that right after these messages. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Hi, this is John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive. Has God shown you that there are things in your life that need to be changed and fixed? Generally speaking, we all have these things in our lives in one shape or another. The difference is if we take care of them right away or not. In the automotive repair world, I've seen this over and over. Catastrophic failures due to people not fixing small issues with their vehicle right away. Here at Southern Boulevard Automotive, we take care of all your vehicle's repair and maintenance needs. We are ASC Master Certified and AAA approved. We are located in Rio Rancho on the corner of Southern and Western Hills across from McDonald's. Our phone number is 892-2300. That's 892-2300. And we have free towing to our facility for repairs. Just ask for details. And with those things God is showing you that you need to change and fix, please don't put it off and let these small issues in your life become catastrophic failures. Jesus stands beside you ready to fix all that is broken in you if you will just simply ask him to do so. And he's already paid the price for the repair.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. We do things differently over here on the affordable side of Albuquerque. We give you a better deal and a better experience. The better deal part, we'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico or put $1,000 cash in your pocket. The better experience part, every new vehicle comes with the confidence of a 100,000-mile warranty and complimentary maintenance. Find your ride at mypowerford.com or come see us on the affordable side of Albuquerque on Montaño, west of I-25.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back into ABQ Connect. Hope you are having a good week so far here on Tuesday. Appreciate you being in the studio with us. Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, you're a frequent visitor here. I appreciate your contributions. I appreciate all your ideas. And we are really offering a challenge to our listeners to try to do some things that might turn our state around. And you've got a lot of great ideas. I would hope that the political climate in the state would change to where we're actually having a dialogue between the Democrats and the Republicans and we get away from some of the infighting that we've seen. I want to talk to you now about the budget. We started in our first segment talking about that, and then I digressed. I apologize, but there's so much to talk about. So we've got a $7.6 million budget.
Billion,
I'm sorry. Yep, that's right. Yeah, the B word's a lot different than the M word.
Yep.
So we've got a $7.6 billion budget, and as much as $3 billion of that could be coming from oil and gas revenues. And right now, at $31 a barrel, State of New Mexico can't afford to stay in oil production. They have to start shutting those things down. Is that a correct perspective?
So, yes, it is true that a lot of producers are going to be reevaluating their production levels and presence in the Permian Basin in New Mexico. That's not unique to New Mexico by any stretch. ExxonMobil, obviously, you know, big oil producing company has already decided to leave the Permian Basin. Right, they made this decision, or at least publicly made this decision, right before things kind of got out of control with the coronavirus. Now, when it comes to New Mexico's budget, there's kind of this useful fiction that we all talk about amongst ourselves and the way we discuss the budget. So $7.6 billion is the annual general fund budget. That is what the legislature comes to Santa Fe and discusses every single year. That does not mean that is the sum total of the amount of money spent by the state of New Mexico. In fact, it's been a year or two since I really looked at it, but if you take all of the money that comes into the state via that is distributed ultimately by the state government, it's closer to $20 billion on an annual basis.
Wow.
Now, that means Medicaid spending, for example. Quick and dirty, Medicaid is federally funded to the tune of, in a state like New Mexico that's poor, on the order of 85 to 90% of the total Medicaid money comes from Washington, D.C., and then it's dispersed out. Education funding, you also get a lot of federal dollars in that. Medicaid's the big one, though. Now, Social Security is different. That's not included in this. It's very specific in terms of who is actually distributing the money. And oil and gas is another aspect of that, because for some good reasons, even if I'm not thrilled with every aspect of the way this all works, we have these permanent funds. So money goes in and comes out constantly. It's almost like a train station or something. Mm-hmm. You have money deposited from the severance taxes and the money that's coming in from oil and gas. And then at the same time, that's being invested over time, and money is flowing out to various so-called beneficiaries under the New Mexico Constitution, depending on which permanent fund you're talking about. The land grant permanent fund is the big one, and that funds a lot of money and a lot of K-12, funds higher education. It funds things like the School for the Blind, the School for the Deaf, and various other things. So that money is then counted in the general fund when it's dispersed outwards. But it's a much bigger picture in terms of the way the general fund operates, and the overall budget is done with the inclusion of all that federal money and other money flowing out of the oil and gas industry. So it wouldn't be accurate to necessarily say that the 40% of the general fund is directly oil and gas. I couldn't give you an exact number offhand, but New Mexico is very reliant on oil and gas prices, and it impacts, it's kind of a cascading effect. It'll start to impact the tax revenues and the jobs and the people money that they pay in taxes, the gross receipts taxes, because those are paid on oil and gas wells when those are created, and that goes away very quickly. But there's other ways that the money, down the road, 6 months from now, it will be slower coming into the state, and slower after that. If the permanent fund doesn't grow as fast, that's less money. So it's a interesting and very dynamic system.
I don't know if it's by design, but this price war that was initiated by Saudi Arabia and Russia to basically eliminate the United States from oil and gas production, I don't know if it was by design, instituted during the coronavirus or exactly what the strategy was, but that is in fact what's happened. So is it reasonable to say that it's likely that we could have a shortfall in oil and gas revenues? So that means the southeast part of the state is really going to be impacted, because you're going to have a lot of layoffs. You're going to have effects to the general fund in whatever amount. And so it looks like Michelle Lujan Grisham has come up and said, okay, we had 216 road projects, so we're going to chop off just under $50 million from the budget. And any of us that have driven around New Mexico, because we have beautiful summers and cold winters, you have an abundance of potholes. Mm-hmm. We need these roads and stuff fixed. How is that going to affect our state?
Well, it's obviously frustrating, because kind of as a free market conservative type person, government has few and limited responsibilities. And we could argue, we can make an intellectual case for why the free market can successfully provide a lot of infrastructure. But the government in this state and in this country, generally speaking, does create infrastructure. And it's one of the basic things that we expect out of our government. And for her to take $50 million out of that particular pot of money, I think shows her priorities to be a little askew, a little off center, especially in times like these, when we do have road issues. We're not the worst state in the country when it comes to roads, but we could be a heck of a lot better. And I think everybody in Albuquerque and everybody around the state, especially in the southeastern corner of the state, where the oil and gas has been drilled and transported, materials and all those kinds of things, that they've had an impact on our roads. And folks in Carlsbad and Hobbs and Leonetti counties, those folks would like to see just some of that money that tax money flow back to their community directly without having to go to Santa Fe, because they know that they're not getting their fair share out of that pot of money. Will we have a long-term issue? I don't know, but you just look at all the money in the last budget, all the film subsidies, all the money that goes to the rail runner, and the limited impact that all of, you know, a lot of spending that we've seen over the years, going back to Richardson or even more recently with the new, you know, free college entitlement, et cetera. It just makes one question the priorities that are at play in Santa Fe, especially among the current administration. And we'd like to see transportation as a higher priority and some of these other programs as a little less of a priority.
Paul Gessing in studio with us. He is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. We'll be right back with more from Paul right after these messages.
God is love. God's love is intrinsic. It is as essential to God as light is to the sun, as blue is to the sky, as wet is to water. You don't make water wet, it is wet. In all of these cases, the attribute is intrinsic to the object. Take great joy in your God. He loves you. Hey, this is Pastor Scott Thom of Cross Christian Fellowship. Connect with us at crossfellowship.org.
Moving with integrity. Slater Transfer and Storage is family-owned with over 30 years in the moving industry. They offer many services to cover all your moving needs. Local and long-distance movers committed to excellence on every move. They also have on-site storage. Begin your next move with a free, no-obligation quote. Call 505-345-8841. That's 505-345-8841. Located at 6900 Washington Street Northeast. Or online at slateratlas.com.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio with us. Paul, tell us a little bit about your website and how people can use the Rio Grande Foundation as a resource and how they can support what you're doing.
Yeah, you can find our website at riograndefoundation.org. That's got our Freedom Index available there, where you can track your legislators, how they voted on the floor of the New Mexico legislature on various policies, whether it's education reform, whether it's budgets and spending and tax increases or any of those issues. During this session, we've got data going back to 2015, so not just this year. You can go back and see how your legislator has voted for several years. And we've got errorsofenchantment.com. It's more of a blog-type structure. It's updated as much as a couple times a day, at least generally one post a day during the week. And it really is an area where we get to discuss and hone in on some of the big policy battles and debates and discussions going on in our community, in other communities around New Mexico, and around our state.
Paul, last thing we'll ask you about the budget today is, do you think a special session is likely?
I do. It's just a matter of where, when the governor decides to call it. You know, the thing that we've always looked at is you've got these rainy day funds and other permanent funds and whatnot, and those are fine and dandy, but when large numbers of people are out of work, especially in the oil and gas business, because they pay so many taxes down there. But in general, you're going to see, I think, a significant spike in unemployment across the country due to the virus and just the slowdown of business. You know, it's one of the things that one of the reasons that we would like to see a more strong emphasis on free market solutions as opposed to government is that, you know, free market providers change with the incentives that they face. In terms of education, you have people right now who are just being paid for staying at home in the education system. And that sounds like a good thing. It sounds like the humane thing to do, but it also deadens the whole system to let's get back to work. Let's go do things right now. And I realize that as an educator, you may be saying, well, we can't teach because of the virus. But I guarantee you there are people in the free market doing innovative things to bring educational options to children and adults alike. A lot of online and virtual learning is going on right now, and we're kind of seeing the importance of homeschooling and being responsible for yourself and your own child's educational outcomes, doing these things online. There are great programs, great websites. Khan Academy is one of the very big ones, and it's free. K-H-A-N Academy, where you can learn anything. And, you know, we've gotten away from this mentality that we're kind of responsible for our own learning, our own understanding of the world around us, kind of being self-starters, self-learners. Instead, we've said, well, there's these professionals who do everything, and we just have to sit back and wait for them to tell us what to do and help us. There's nothing wrong with being a professional teacher, and teachers do a lot of great things. But ultimately, learning has to be done by somebody who wants to learn and it desires to learn. And you can learn an unlimited amount of things online or by just picking up a book and reading and looking at what is being showed to you from all over the world, all different time periods in our history. Hopefully maybe it's one of the good things to come out of the silver lining out of this deep, dark, black cloud, because it's a pretty black cloud out there right now, economically, socially, politically. There's a lot of negativity, but hopefully people can go back to some self-sustainability and trying to be self-starters in the area of learning. And I think that that changes dramatically when you've got government providing the service as opposed to somebody who's out there trying to make a buck and provide an innovative thing. And if they don't do it, they don't get paid. They don't eat.
Well, to support your point, I mean, we can just take a look at churches like Calvary Albuquerque, Legacy Church, Citizens Church, the larger churches in Albuquerque all have amazing technologies where not only can you attend services and worship and see the sermons, but you have podcasts on stations like KT. Mm-hmm. You have podcasts on the Rio Grande Foundation, mm-hmm, and things that you do. So the technology is already being employed. I know our former president, George W. Bush, has always teased because he used to mess up cliched sayings like this. This is not rocket surgery, folks. Mm-hmm. It's not. I mean, there's a lot of options for education, and there's so many talented educators, but the system has to adopt those and start. You know, I can say that at Calvary of Albuquerque, this has been a developing thing for the last 30 years. And every time there's a new innovation, there's a huge church out of I believe, North Carolina called Elevation Church. I had some folks on the station that do what they call watch parties, where they watch their services on Sunday afternoons. And it's a small group kind of setting. And they watch the service on video, and they have music and everything, but they do that remotely. And that's happening all across the country. And there's a lot of churches that do that. I know.
Well, and the early Christians got together in small groups, yeah, and met under the noses of the Roman Empire. Sorry. Big bad group up there. But, we're trying to avoid large groups of people today, but you know, ultimately, a big part of any religion is interpersonal contact and those relations. And you can definitely do a watch party kind of thing, or even watch on your own. But having the ability to share with other people, even if it's in a much smaller group than you're used to, I think is important and critical. And you know, talking more importantly about the messages that are presented in the scripture and whatnot, it's an empowering thing. And, you know, we all, you know, are used to either ministers or priests or whoever giving their interpretation, but it's a different thing to go around a room of 5 to 10 people after reading something out of the Bible and say, Jim, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's an amazing thing we call fellowship. Yeah. Hey, and you know what? The universities seem to have a handle on this, Paul. I have a daughter who is currently attending Point Loma Nazarene University in San Diego. They've shut that down. She's driving home today, and she'll finish the semester online. I understand that most of the University of New Mexico is doing that. And I'm sure that's true with major universities across the country. I think Baylor University is doing the same thing. These are all universities where I know kids that attend. Mm-hmm. So that seems like a pretty simple solution to limit the spread of the virus. Now, let's go to some other issues. Let's talk about your stand against things like paid sick leave.
Okay.
And now I read on your website, Paul, that you're thinking about the current situation and you have some compromise and you've put some thoughtful kinds of time to consider what your position would be on that. Does the coronavirus justify paid sick leave?
It could. And, you know, here's our philosophy. First and foremost, policies driven out of Washington, D.C., one size fits all, really not a good thing. I mean, it's just not in the Constitution for the U.S. federal government to do a one size fits all, you know, put it into place, whether it's sick leave or something else. Even minimum wages, I don't think that is the role of Washington, D.C. And the idea that you have a minimum wage that makes sense for New Mexico as well as California or New York is crazy. So we don't want Washington, D.C. and Congress acting. But if we're going to have mandatory paid sick leave in a time of an epidemic, then we can have that policy in place during a declared time of a health emergency. And I think that's okay. Now, that's not to say that private sector businesses aren't already evolving and changing their policies to account for this issue. I know Walmart is one of several big, big corporations that has revised and started to offer more paid sick leave thanks to the health concerns right now. So, we would still push back against the idea of some kind of universal year-round entitlement to paid sick leave. And I think that places an undue burden, especially on the small businesses. And those folks, even in a health emergency, are going to face some of the most significant problems. I mean, the people who are going to see their businesses go under or not be able to pay the bills in their own households or their employees, it's going to be the small businesses. Walmart's going to be just fine through all of this. Then some people are buying Walmart stock right now because they're seeing the hand sanitizer and the toilet paper flying off the shelves along with food and everything else. And they're saying, well, the one thing that people are spending their money on is stuff at Walmart or Target or whatever it might be. But it's the mom and pop business right now that's just getting hammered. And setting up a new free entitlement for them that's permanent is going to be, potentially the difference between staying in business and getting booted out of business. So I think that if you do something short term during a health emergency, that's at least a reasonable policy. But it should be, again, the legislature. And, you know, maybe it's the kind of thing that you call everybody in. I don't know. Yeah, we're in uncharted territory. I'm just thinking through this while I'm talking to you. Do you want an entire group of legislators and lobbyists and all these folks coming up to Santa Fe and possibly spreading viruses and whatnot? You know, maybe this is when you finally pull the trigger on some kind of virtual legislative environment. I do know that Albuquerque City Council is meeting, albeit without the public there directly. And I'm not a huge fan of that, but I think some ground rules are in order. In today's virtual world, do we have processes in place to allow these kinds of policies to be enacted when there's a health emergency going on? And I think, you know, there's always issues, and not to get too far down the virtual path, but on the flip side, when you talk about Santa Fe and the legislature, you know, we've been concerned in normal times that you don't have the opportunity for, say, somebody who's a real expert on an issue, could be oil and gas, logically, in Hobbs, New Mexico, that they have to spend literally 5-6 hours in a vehicle One way to get up to Santa Fe to testify for a hearing that may or may not happen at the time that they are supposed to be happening, and then you have to go back to Hobbs, New Mexico again. And whether it's somebody who's concerned about an issue or someone who's an expert, are there ways to virtually pipe them in and allow them to have the opportunity to testify? So I do think that maybe this, again, a silver lining here, giving government a swift kick in the pants, especially the legislature, and saying, okay, guys, you should have the ability to have a special session if the budget is going out of reality. It's not able to fit the needs of New Mexico as it is right now. Should you have the ability to meet in a virtual setting? We'll see.
I love the ideas. Paul, we've only got a few minutes left, and we got three or four more things that we wanted to talk about that aren't, I guess, major issues, but I do think they're interesting to talk about, and I appreciate your follow-up. Again, riograndfoundation.org is where you can go and get even more details about this. Paul can't possibly cover all the things going on in New Mexico in the 45 minutes we have with him today. But Councilor Pat Davis wants to crack down on plastic bags, Paul. I guess that means eliminate all of them?
Yes. We had the plastic bag ban that took effect at the beginning of January. We ran across a study from Loma Linda, California Health College. It's just Loma Linda Health College. And they actually did an experiment where they put a virus that wasn't going to infect people and cause any problems, but they stuck it in a reusable bag and had a secret shopper go through a store, and actually then they came back and tested where this dummy virus had gone, and they found it was all over the place, all over the registers, all over the counters and whatnot. And the point is that Pat Davis is trying to eliminate even more. There's bags that are thicker than a certain millimeter level that are exempt from the local law. And Davis is talking just recently, within the last week, about how we need to go in and have that loophole eliminated. And our view is this is a perfect time where we should be talking about pulling back on that plastic bag ban, because reusable bags have to be washed constantly. Here in the desert, they have to be washed with hot water to kill all those germs and bacteria, or they will spread. And with the germs and the situation going on, that is a real concern. So I think instead of trying to close the loopholes, Davis and our city council should be talking about at least a temporary elimination of the ban on plastic bags at the grocery stores and other places. So
what's interesting, and I didn't want to get into this, but I'm thinking about I live in Corrales, and Corrales has a recycling plan, and I'm not sure this is true with everybody, but you can't even put plastic bags in the recycling anymore.
Okay.
And I find that odd because, you know, maybe I would really like to see one of these days, I'd like to track recycling bags in 20 different locations around the state and see how much of it's actually getting recycled.
Well, it's not something that goes into your traditional plastic bag, your bin, I should say. Typically, I've seen plastic bags recycled at the grocery stores. Mm-hmm. And my family, we do not recycle many plastic bags. We actually use them for our dogs, mm-hmm, and for our trash cans.
Yeah.
So we reuse those plastic bags, which is actually, they say, the most environmentally sustainable way to do things, because a lot of plastic nationwide and worldwide is actually not recycled, even if it's intended to be recycled. It's just the processes are not in place, and the facilities and the energy that's required to recycle is not always there to make that a viable option.
Paul, I'm going to have to make this our last question, but I wanted to get to it because it's interesting that you sometimes have some direct confrontation with holding our politicians accountable. And Mayor Keller, back in the time we were talking about democracy dollars, mm-hmm, being as part of the voting public's consideration, democracy dollars was a concept that was basically something that your Rio Grande Foundation was against. But apparently, the city of Albuquerque was promoting democracy dollars on their website.
Yeah, long story short, the Keller administration put a message up on the CABQ.gov website, said vote yes, not only on democracy dollars, but some bonds and, you know, that's the homeless shelter, et cetera. We think that is an abuse of taxpayer resources, abuse of what government is supposed to do. And we called them on it. We filed an ethics complaint, and we were found to be in the right by the Ethics Commission. The Keller administration essentially apologized, said we're not going to do this again. We're in the wrong. And so we'll take it. We have longstanding concerns as an organization, as every taxpayer should, with the use of tax dollars to lobby the citizens for more tax dollars. I think that's a very questionable and problematic use of our money. And it's a small victory, but we will definitely take it. So glad to see Tim Keller and his administration, you know, acknowledging where they overreached on that.
Paul, you're so gracious to be here. The situation with the coronavirus is a fluid situation. So I'm going to ask you if you'll come back on here, try to get you on as soon as a couple weeks from now and talk about everything continuing to go on. So, again, thank you for being on ABQ Connect.
Thank you, Jim. We'll see how it all unfolds over the next few weeks. It's going to be, I believe it's a curse, the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Unbelievable time we are living in. We hope everybody stays safe and don't panic. Take care of one another. And we always want to encourage everybody in their faith to trust what God is doing. And we will find out what the good is. And Paul's even pointed out a few possible silver linings to this thing. So we'll see you tomorrow. Ray Mondragon in studio with us tomorrow with Creation Science Fellowship. Thanks for joining us on ABQ.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.